Expand your Medicare options. Ed Sandrick of Humana.
The launch of Humana Honor is a natural next step in our commitment to veterans. Enrolling in a Medicare Advantage plan provides access to additional services and benefits, like urgent care and dental coverage, while the VA continues to provide prescription drug coverage and primary care.
It's important veterans understand how Humana's Medicare Advantage Honor plans complement VA benefits in order to maximize veterans' health coverage. The Medicare Advantage plans provide extra benefits and services, expand medical provider options, and are open to everyone with Medicare. For more, visit humana.com/Medicare.
United Airlines is extending the grounding of its 737 MAX fleet until at least after March 4th of 2020. The airline says it will cancel around 5,100 flights for the rest of this year, plus another 3,500 more next year. It's the third major airline to push back the return of their MAX fleet until early March. An ugly scuffle at the end of an NFL game has led to suspensions. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
The league has suspended Cleveland Browns defensive end Myles Garrett for the rest of the season and the playoffs if his team was to make it. Garrett ripped the helmet off Pittsburgh Steelers QB Mason Rudolph and then clubbed him in the head with it in the final seconds of the Thursday night game. Pittsburgh center Maurkice Pouncey, who jumped into Garrett and then kicked and punched him after Rudolph had been struck, has been suspended for 3 games. Steelers coach Mike Tomlin not in the mood to discuss it at the after-game news conference.
I'll keep my thoughts to myself. You guys saw what happened at the end.
USA Radio News.
Friends and family, I've told you about the great sleep I get with my MyPillow every night. Well, right now, you can get a great deal and extra safety. Because if you go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, get their buy one, get one free offer on the MyPillow premium pillow. Your 60-day money-back guarantee goes all the way through March 1st, 2020. That's now through December 25th. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special and use my promo code USA.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross joins Fox Business to discuss the U.S.-China trade talks and China's proposed purchasing of U.S. farm goods.
Well, they can certainly afford to buy $40 to $50 billion. In fact, they really need that phased in over the couple of year time period. Question is, are they willing to commit to it? And if they are willing to commit, are there any escape hatches to the commitment?
Teresa Tomlinson is a former Democratic mayor of Columbus, Georgia, and she's running for the Democratic nomination to challenge Senator David Perdue of Georgia, the Republican. Now, she says that folks just need to stop complaining about the cost of the Green New Deal.
That we have a crisis on our hands with climate change, and I can tell you we're already paying for it. So people can stop complaining about what they think the, quote, Green New Deal or any other bold idea might cost us, because we're already paying for the effect. We might as well be paying to limit and stop the climate change and not just pick up the pieces after the disaster impact of it.
And finally, back on this date in 1956, Elvis makes his movie debut in Love Me Tender. I'm sure you Elvis fans out there were saying that before I could say it. The big screen debut of the King of Rock and Roll was at the Paramount Theater in New York City. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, good afternoon, Friday afternoon. Can't believe it's the middle of November, but that's probably because I've been away since late September. Hi, I'm Pat Smith's program, It's the Law. But let's talk a little bit first about the weather. Of course, to me, it's freezing because I come out of very warm weather, 90 degrees and above. So getting off that plane last night was a real shock. But I guess I missed some of the worst. Tonight, actually, it's mostly clear, down to about 25 degrees. So it's going to be cold, but not freezing. Tomorrow really is the nice day of the weekend, 37 degrees and sunny. By tomorrow night, it's partly cloudy. And then into Sunday, going to start partly cloudy, then a slight chance of rain, about a 20% chance of rain, high of about 40 degrees on Sunday. And by Sunday night, another chance of rain, 30%. And into Monday, another 20 to 30% chance of rain. And then Monday night, chance of showers, and then rain or snow, depending on how cold. Low about 32 degrees, so it could be some of that slushy stuff. Well, we'll be back, and I want to talk to you about what's been happening in the legal news in New Jersey while I've been away. And please stay tuned. My loyal viewers, I appreciate it. And sorry, I also came back with the customary cold after traveling overseas. So we'll be back, talk about what's happening in the news after I bring you just a couple spots.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Well, good afternoon again. I'm Pat Smiths and wanted to report on some of the recent cases that have been approved for publication and some that may be of interest that have not. But there was a case this week that I thought I should bring up because I'm not sure I've ever talked about this statute before. And this is a case, the plaintiff respondent was CR versus MT, defendant appellant. Now, the reason that they use initials is, of course, in a case like this, to protect the identities, especially of the, in this case, the plaintiff. So this was a case that was on appeal to the appellate division from Gloucester County, and the the appellant was represented by a private attorney, and the respondent, who was the plaintiff, was represented by South Jersey Legal Services and the on appeal. So the reason that this case, I think, is important is that fact that many people do not even or are not even aware that there is a Sexual Assault Survivor Protection Act. It's called SASPA, or S-A-S-P-A. The statute is found at New Jersey Statute Annotated 2C:14-13-21. And in this case, the plaintiff commenced an action under that statute, asking and seeking to restrain the defendant from having any communications or contact with her. Now, this statute offers an avenue for the issuance of restraining orders in favor of sexual abuse victims who cannot obtain relief under the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act. So, in fact, the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act is very specific with respect to who is covered under that act. And basically, there are people who have cohabited together. And that's why there are other people who would not be able to use the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act to protect themselves. And this is an alternative. So this case was tried at the trial level, and there was a one-day trial, and it revealed that neither party disputed the fact that there was sexual conduct. And however, the issue was whether the plaintiff consented or was able to consent to the sexual encounter. And that was, and even on appeal, remained the central issue. Now, the statute requires certain things. And the first prong of the statute requires that the alleged victim demonstrate by a preponderance of the evidence that a sexual encounter was non-consensual. So now it's not the criminal burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but it is the preponderance of the evidence. So lack of consent may be demonstrated by proof of a temporary mental incapacity, that's part of the statute, which may be generated by a victim's intoxication. So this is what is critical in so many of these cases. And so the if the victim is intoxicated under in the statute, then is 2C:14-1(i). So in this case, the trial judge found that the plaintiff was so intoxicated that unable to consent or object. And then so that was the first prong. So having carefully considered the issues raised in the appeal, the appellate division concluded that the statute draws no distinction between voluntary and involuntary intoxication when determining whether an alleged victim lacked the capacity to consent. Very, very important. So to prove a lack of consent due to intoxication, an alleged victim must prove a prostration of faculties. And in this case, the appellate division said a remand was necessary in this case because the judge did not apply the prostration of faculties standard when finding the plaintiff was incapable of consenting. It's a term that most of us don't use, obviously. But in this case, because it was necessary to remand for further findings, and that's what happens in the appellate division. If the court finds that the trial court perhaps committed an error because the trial court needed to enunciate the findings more specifically, that's where they will remand. They don't overturn it, but they remand it to the trial judge to, I guess what we would usually say, get it right. So that the court decided, and the appellate division decided, not to reach the defendant's argument about the second prong of the statute, which permits the issuance of a restraining order because of the possibility of future risk to the safety or well-being of the alleged victim. So that's the second prong. First, of course, is lack of consent, and then the second is the possibility of future risk. So As indicated, the first prong requires that the alleged victim prove by a preponderance of the evidence, and this is a quote, that the occurrence of one or more acts of non-consensual sexual contact, sexual penetration, or lewdness, or any attempt at such conduct. So that's the first prong. So the appellate division started by observing that the plaintiff's claim and defendant's response did not focus on whether the sexual contact or sexual penetration did or did not occur. The ultimate fact in dispute concerned whether plaintiff consented to the sexual relations that occurred. This dispute posed separate factual questions. And the first is, did the plaintiff actually express or otherwise convey her consent to engage in sexual relations? And if not, was she intoxicated to a point where she was incapable of consenting? So in reviewing the evidence and the trial judge's findings, the appellate division noted that certain facts were undisputed. And so they went into the undisputed facts. I think this is important because it should sign, you know, there's a warning out there. Have to be very, very careful. Both men and women, of course, have to be very careful in these situations, because certainly either one who seeks the sexual encounter, and let's face it, it's usually the man who is accused then of under this statute. So be very careful to find out whether or not this is consensual, number one, and number two, whether the other party really is too intoxicated to be able to consent. So in the question in this case, the plaintiff and a friend of hers consumed alcohol while visiting two bars and a friend's house. And eventually, at the first stop, the bartender refused to serve the plaintiff's friend. So the young women were driven by a friend to another bar. They also called the defendant, who was the friend's cousin, who worked at this last bar, and they asked that he join them. He declined, and the women then continued to drink at the bar until the plaintiff's friend was cut off again. So the bartender texted the defendant to come and pick up his cousin and the plaintiff. A defendant who lived nearby soon arrived and told his cousin and the plaintiff they were leaving. And then the plaintiff protested because she was not finished her drink. The defendant told her to chug it. She complied, and the three of them left. So in this case, whatever happened could not be under the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act because, frankly, if the defendant and the plaintiff even knew each other, it was just some casual, and the only reason the defendant was called is that his cousin was the one drinking with the plaintiff. So then rather than take the women to the cousin's residence as they asked, the defendant took them to his home. And the defendant went to bed but later joined the young women in their continued drinking. Apparently, the defendant convinced his cousin to go to bed in the guest room, and the plaintiff was on a couch in another room, and that's where the two people, meaning the plaintiff and defendant, their stories were different. So the defendant claimed the plaintiff led him into the garage, and the plaintiff claimed that he carried her there. Plaintiff testified that the defendant made sexual demands, and the plaintiff asserted, at least this is what the trial judge said, that she was scared because the defendant was physically imposing, and she believed she had no alternative but to comply, so she did. Now, the plaintiff also testified that prior to the sexual penetration, words in effect that, "I do not want this." Again, this is from the trial judge's decision. And so in the trial judge's if the plaintiff's versions were to be credited, plaintiff then revoked, and this is a quote, revoked whatever consent there should have been. However, the defendant did not stop. Now, the defendant countered plaintiff's claim that she did not consent or was otherwise unwilling. He testified he had gone to bed, but was interrupted when plaintiff asked for a blanket. He followed her to the couch where she was planning to sleep, and they began to fool around. Defendant testified that while the plaintiff suggested that she actually was the one who suggested they go into the garage to avoid the possibility of his cousin waking up, his cousin and her friend. Defendant then described in his testimony that they engaged in consensual sexual relations. So now, if by a preponderance of the evidence, the judge found the plaintiff either verbally or impliedly consented only because she was in fear or initially consented and then withdrew her consent, the predicate act necessary to for the first prong of the statute would have been proven. So what the judge also observed in his findings, that the defendant was physically large and seemed to be a powerful young man, and the plaintiff is of slight build. May or may not be significant, but something always to be concerned about. So permission to engage in sexual relations must be freely given, and that willingness may be inferred from acts or statements reasonably viewed in the light of the circumstances. This refers to another case. So plaintiff's version included her claim that she only assented out of fear or in the face of compelling force, and that at some point in the encounter she expressed her desire that the defendant stop. Now, this would be sufficient under the first prong of the statute. And then, however, in this case, the judge found the parties' competing versions to be equally plausible. In short, he found the plaintiff failed to prove her version was more likely than the defendant's version. And the trial judge view and the weight of the evidence, the appellate division confirmed that the trial judge's view of the weight of the evidence commands their deference. And this is under a well-known case in Rover Farms. However, one of the issues is whether or not the plaintiff or the victim in a sexual assault must resist to the uttermost. And that is an obsolete idea. And a victim who submits to a compelling force or a result of fear has not consented. So there's another case law that support that. So if a victim submits based on compelling fear compelling force or being put in fear or as a result of her fear, that's not consent. So that because in this case the judge concluded plaintiff failed to tip the scale as far as evidence in her favor, that she had refused to engage in sexual conduct or that she consented out of fear or that she revoked the consent during the encounter, the remaining factual dispute about consent turned on whether there was a sufficient ground upon which it could be found that she was incapable of consenting. So this is where it goes to the intoxication. Well, the legislature, what they meant in requiring an alleged victim prove the first prong, that an act of non-consensual sexual conduct or penetration occurred, they also looked to the other part of the statute, which in fact defines a sexual assault victim as, quote, one whom the actor knew or should have known was, among other things, mentally incapacitated. And the term mentally incapacitated is defined as that condition in which a person is rendered temporarily incapable of understanding or controlling his conduct due to the influence of a narcotic, anesthesia, and a intoxicant or other substance administered to that person without his prior knowledge or consent. Now, in this case, of course, administered to a person without his prior knowledge or consent, the plaintiff obviously was drinking of her own consent. So what does that mean? So mentally incapacitated, when considered in its context, gives some pause because the portion of that statute might suggest a requirement that the alleged victim prove her involuntary intoxication, that in other words, that she ingested intoxicants administered to her without her prior knowledge or consent. So in this case, the evidence demonstrated that only, it was voluntary. She did not, was not given some kind of drug. Her drink was not, in any way spiked. She consented. So the question they determined, according to the appellate division, is whether the underscored phrase administered to that person without his prior knowledge or consent, modifies the term intoxicant, or whether it's any other substance administered without his prior consent. So they, in answering, so that really was very technical, in answering that question, and the court always, if there's answering a question, look to the plain meaning of words and phases. So whatever the argument is, they're going to look at the plain meaning. So they said that the last antecedent, which holds that absent an apparent intention, that a qualifying phrase within the statute refers to the last antecedent phrase. So the doctrine, according to the appellate division, required them to conclude that the qualifying phrase applied only to other substance and not intoxicant. So if the legislature, according to this court, meant to include intoxicants, then the legislature would have inserted a comma after other substance. So a mere punctuation mark, but one that would have grammatically called for a different result. So let me read that again. So the influence of, let's say, an intoxicant, comma, or other substance administered to the person without his prior knowledge or consent. So this court held that if the legislature meant that it referred to a narcotic or intoxicant, then it after the word substance, there would have had to have been a comma. So this is the difference. The statute says narcotic and anesthetic, comma, narcotic, comma, anesthetic, comma, intoxicant, comma, or other substance administered to that person without his prior knowledge or consent. So the difference is if there was a comma after substance, then they would have said that it would be any of these things administered to the person without his prior knowledge or consent. So in this case, if that's what the legislature meant, they basically screwed up because they didn't put the comma in. So that this is what the court specifically said. If they wanted that meaning, the legislature would have had to insert a comma after other substance. Now, the court also recognized that the emphasis on the absent comma may sound like a hyper-technical way to construe statutes. However, they said it isn't. The courts have applied this tenet time and again in construing legislation. And they refer to a case holding in a similar circumstance. If the legislature had intended otherwise, it would have inserted a comma after the last prior antecedent. And they refer to a case of, with respect to that holding. And it was a case where holding the use of a comma to separate a modifier from an antecedent phrase indicates an intent to amplify the modifier to all previous antecedent phrases. And they talk about other cases. So they've held that the legislature undoubtedly acted on the assumption that we would derive the intended meaning of the statute through application of this established doctrine. And so they confidently concluded that the legislature's omission of a comma after other substance was intended to invoke the doctrine of last antecedent in the construction, thereby, conveying the legislature's intent that the did not mean that someone who was intoxicated would have to have been intoxicated without knowing it. So they held that an alleged victim may prove the lack of consent by proving a mental incapacity brought about by either voluntary or involuntary intoxication. And then they talk about some other cases, etc. And so, having determined that the victim's intoxication, even when produced voluntarily, may support a finding that the victim could not consent, they consider the level of intoxication required to support such a finding. And it is probably best to consider this question, obviously, from the standpoint of the well-established meaning of consent, a voluntary yielding to another proposes. Well, then they talk about consent and what that means and what voluntary consent is and what involuntary yielding is. And, of course, that's not consent. So the question is whether the plaintiff was able to voluntarily yield to defendant's action, and that requires consideration of her state of mind at the time. And so they found an appropriate analogy in the intoxication defense available in criminal justice settings. So they talk further in this case about a criminally accused individual's intoxication and what that means. But I think that the bottom line of this case, and I know I've gone on and on, but the bottom line of this case is that anybody who either takes advantage or thinks that someone who's intoxicated is voluntarily consenting to a sexual encounter is at great risk, because if there is an accusation, and I'm going to use the word he, but that, because that's usually how it happens. If there's an accusation later on that it was not voluntary and that the victim was unable to consent because she had been intoxicated to the point where she couldn't consent, it's a big warning sign. And it should be heeded, and everyone, really, especially all the young people, should know about this so that they don't get themselves in a situation where they could be accused under this statute. Very serious situation. And now I'm going to play some spots, because we've used a substantial part of the time on this particular case, but I think it's important enough. And I'll tell you again, the statute is, and again, this one, this young woman would not be able to proceed under prevention of domestic violence because she had not lived with the defendant. And in fact, this could have been the first time they saw each other. So the statute in question is the Sexual Assault Survivor Protection Act, SASPA. It's found at New Jersey Statute Annotated 2C:14-13-21. Very, very important that, you know, I shouldn't say all young people and only young people, but young people are aware of this statute and the trouble they could get into if they think a sexual encounter is voluntary, but it's with someone who's intoxicated. Back in a minute.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Well, hello again. I know I spent a lot of time talking about the statute against that protects sexual assault victims, but I think that's very important, and I think certainly every young person should be aware of this statute. So that there have been certainly other cases. There was an environmental law case published, which would be very important for anybody interested in that area of law. As I said, I was trying to make it important to me, though, to talk about the case CR versus MT, which really spells out in detail, you know, what happens under the Sexual Assault Survivor Protection Act. So that there was a New Jersey Transit settlement with a woman injured in Hoboken Terminal crash. She was injured at the Hoboken Terminal 3 years ago. It was settled for $1.5 million. I guess I certainly wouldn't want to be that injured, but this woman had severe injuries. Let's see. There were not as many. Again, now there was. This is not published, but this is a family law case where the defendant appealed the final restraining order entered against him while divorce proceedings were pending. So that is that's always a concern, that somebody will file while divorce proceedings are pending. Now, this, of course, was filed under the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act, which covers people who not only are married but who have lived together in certain other circumstances, family members. In fact, it's really important to look at the jurisdiction, which is fairly significant concern, but covers a number of people that sometimes you don't think would be covered. But in this case, the plaintiff obtained a TRO based on alleged harassment, and according to this testimony, the defendant allegedly violated the TRO by communicating with her, and the final restraining order was necessary to protect her from harm. Now, the defendant's husband argued that the trial judge's findings were not based on sufficient evidence. And what happened is the plaintiff testified the defendant entered the house at 6 a.m. without her permission and was running around the bedroom threatening to make her pay. She also testified to another incident when her daughter called the police on defendant, and defendant, she also produced multiple Facebook messages sent by the defendant, testifying that due to defendant's drug use, she never knew when he was going to snap, and that he hid along, that he hid long kitchen knives under her furniture. The trial judge found that the plaintiff was credible and noted that the defendant had been arrested with a knife and had violated the prior restraining order. Substantial evidence in the record supported the trial judge's finding. This is the appellate division said that the FRO was upheld. And frankly, this was some scary stuff. In other words, after she received the temporary restraining order, and a temporary restraining order can be easily obtained. I'm not going to say it won't be. However, all a defendant has to do is make sure that he or she complies with the temporary restraining order. They will have their day in court. And sometimes it's difficult to let clients know that they will have their day in court. And definitely it can be very expensive, very difficult for a defendant to be restrained from his or her home during the pendency of the case, which can take only 10 days because usually the return date for the final hearing is 10 days after the temporary restraining order is entered. So although there are a lot of emotions and although there's a lot of concern, unless the defendant asks for a continuance, which frankly they should if they haven't talked to an attorney, this is a very significant situation, and it's very significant if there is a final restraining order. However, it can't be violated. In this case, it was, and unfortunately reminds me of a case where my firm, we had, not we, but the woman we were representing, had a final restraining order against her husband. He came to the property, and we don't know exactly what happened, but somehow he either lured her into his car or somehow forced her into his car and subsequently killed her. And so that, you know, the judges are concerned in cases like this. This man was totally out of control, and there didn't seem to be, you know, any basis for his, well, there certainly wasn't any basis for him doing what he had done, gone to her home, gone into the home where he was restrained, probably his home, but restrained from his home. And certainly the fact that he had long knives, had been arrested with a knife, etc., should have caused great concern, and of course did. And somehow, I don't know exactly why he thought that he would win on appeal. But the one thing about, and I think the judges are more careful when it's a situation where people are going through a divorce, because there's a recognition that someone who is gets a final restraining order does have a significant advantage in many cases. So, there's been some moving around of attorneys. So the just trying to find out some of the things that might be of interest. There was an admiralty case not approved for publication, so I'm not sure that that would be something that should be a big concern. Not many people would be concerned about that. Amazon is facing a disability discrimination lawsuit from a New Jersey warehouse worker who was fired for using medical marijuana. So that that's going to be an interesting case. So the I'm just trying to think of anything else here that might be of real significance for my listening audience. As I said, there have been a number of cases that have not been approved for publication. So that means, of course, that they can't be used as precedent. A Bergen County jury, however, awarded $6 million, including $4.13 million in punitive damages in a racial discrimination suit by an administrator of Care One
of A Care One nursing facility in Bergen County. There was a the New Jersey Supreme Court has taken up a case to determine whether a victim's testimony in a criminal trial against a former Bloomfield police officer in which the victim cited such high-profile police brutality cases as that Rodney King, etc., swayed the jury against the officer. That'll be interesting as to whether or not that would be considered so inciting, insightful that it was improper and was improperly allowed. I don't know anything more about that case. I'm just trying to see if anything... more about that. There was a case where the defendant appealed from a trial court's imposition of an extended term sentence because the defendant was sentenced to an extended term as a persistent offender. He appealed and the court reversed and remanded for resentencing, ruling that the trial court erroneously ruled that defendant was last confined within 10 years of the current offense because the trial court, and that's what would be important, whether it was within 10 years. And because the trial court said that the trial judge equated probation with confinement. And the appellate division held that it was remanded for additional fact-finding because the state had presented evidence to suggest the defendant was also detained within the last 10 years for having violated a condition of his probation. So on remand, the state presented evidence that it had not presented during the defendant's initial sentencing hearing. And so that went on to determine whether or not that was appropriate. Okay. Well, I think that it's about time to end the program. Sorry that I know my voice has been bad. I think that the first case that I talked about was important, but I didn't have a lot of time to review other cases and other decisions based on the fact that I have been away. So I will do more of this over the next week to see what other additional legal decisions might be of interest to my general audience. And I know that whether or not anybody's interested, Jim Johnson is leaving the New Jersey Governor's Office to become the new Corporation Counsel for New York City, where he'll lead the city's law department and oversee the work of hundreds of lawyers. So that he's no longer going to be in New Jersey. He's going to New York. Then the new U.S. Court of Appeals, also for the Third Circuit, denied a request to have a panel, en blanc panel, reconsider decision disallowing the use of eminent domain to acquire properties belonging to the state of New Jersey along the Penn East pipeline route. So there was a decision disallowing the use of eminent domain to acquire those properties. So that's not going to be reheard. has some health insurance cases, again, not published. There's a legal sector employment flat as U.S. adds 128,000 jobs. So that despite the GM auto worker strike that temporarily wiped 50,000 jobs out of the books in September, the U.S. economy has still managed to add 128,000 jobs from September to October, according to the statistics. But that was big to take 50,000 jobs. And how many billions of dollars lost. Well, sorry I don't have more today, but let's go and we'll play the news break and come back with the sports guys. And obviously lots of sports stuff going on. To say the, if you haven't heard about the Steelers Browns and the end of that game, that would be enough to sit and listen to or watch sports for the next 2 days. I'm trying to get this up, just bear with me.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump was delivering remarks at the White House regarding health care when at the end of the event, a reporter shouted out a question regarding the current impeachment hearings going on in the House and a tweet that the president sent regarding former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch.
I'm allowed to speak up. If somebody says about me, we're not allowed to have any kind of representation. We're not allowed to have almost anything. And nobody's seen anything like it. In the history of our country, there has never been a disgrace like what's going on right now. So you know what? I have the right to speak. I have freedom of speech, just as other people do.
And your final numbers on Wall Street. Another record close by the Dow as it gained 222 points to close above 28,000 at 28,004. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
An official message from Medicare.
It's open enrollment, Fred. Time to compare plans.
Oh, Alice, we're fine with what we have.
Well, that's what the Johnsons thought until they tried Medicare's new Plan Finder.
The Johnsons, huh?
We saved on our prescription costs.
And got extra benefits. Come on, Fred, maybe we'll find something better.
Plans change every year. Use the new Plan Finder at Medicare.gov to compare health and drug plans. Open enrollment ends December 7th.
What do you know? Comparing plans really pays.
Filling an opening at your company means more than just finding an employee. You're looking for a fit, a match. Robert Half understands that. We know you need someone who can do the work, someone who complements your culture. And, of course, you need that someone fast. When it all comes together, it makes for a perfect fit. Satisfaction guaranteed. Robert Half, the matching experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Visit roberthalf.com for more information.
One of the members of the so-called squad is possibly in some hot water. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes in Washington.
An ethics investigation of Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib is revealing a number of requests for money from her campaign last year. The first-term Democrat making a number of urgent requests for funds from her campaign funds to pay her living expenses. A referral from the Office of Congressional Ethics includes scans of checks totaling thousands of dollars.
As we hear more and more talk regarding 5G, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross tells Fox Business that safety concerns are out there regarding 5G and the security threat is real for the entire nation.
5G is going to be running everything. It's the Internet of Things. If somebody can do evil in the context of 5G, they can do real evil to the whole country.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending,
if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Donald Trump Jr.'s Triggered is number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. Although some are crying foul and saying bulk purchases